3, 2, 1. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
we had decided we weren't going to make that sound on the recording, but I just went with it. Broke the ice.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's going on, man? First of all, let me just say I really appreciate you coming on. I don't know if you're into podcasting or like listening, or if you have any favorite ones that you enjoy listening to, but you know, the hard part about podcasting is finding people.
Uh-huh.
And Carlos, who's been on a few times, highly recommended you. I guess you either thought you have a great business or you're just going to be great sounding on the podcast. But
so you have that radio voice.
I know. But so he sent me your name, and I reached out to you, and you kindly agreed. So thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. And I really have no idea what podcasts are about, and I'm not real tech savvy, you know, with some of these things. I think I mentioned you on the phone. So it's a good introduction for me. And
so really, you know what podcasting is? I mean, like you, I feel like, you know, I'm not really tech savvy. I am kind of tech savvy, but, you know, I didn't really have my finger on the pulse of podcasting. What podcasting turns out to be is just a recorded version of something like, you know, you could do the ABC News, record it while they're doing it, and then post it as a podcast so that you can go back and listen to it without having to be in front of the television. You know, it's almost like DVRing for radio.
No, yeah.
So, you know, the nice thing about podcasting is, and I listen to a few in my car, is that, you know, I listen, and then when I stop my car, the podcast stops, and then when I get back in my car, the podcast starts up again, and I go on with it like that. I don't have to be sitting there listening to the interview if it's on radio or whatever it is.
Right.
So that's it.
Listen to it when you want.
Yeah, it's really there's a lot of podcasts, and what I see now is, like, they'll take a show. I'm a big fan of Undisputed with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a, you know, they just talk about sports. Mm. And now they have a podcast. And I'm like, oh, really? So I go back and check the podcast. It's really the episode they filmed for the day, you know, reposted as a podcast. So actually I could listen to it in my car and stop it and stuff.
Sure. It's probably better these days for people with schedules and busyness and everything.
Well, and, you know, a lot of people... And I don't know about you, but, you know, whether they like TV or don't like TV, or they're battling between, you know, getting rid of Xfinity and just doing these, you know, maybe like an Apple TV or some of the services that you can kind of just pick and choose certain things. Mm. I would love to do that. But we watch one channel, and that's A&E, and that's Live PD. That's the only thing we like to watch. Yeah. Don't ask me. Maybe something's wrong with this. I don't know. But we love that show. If they had a Live PD channel, I could get rid of everything and just have that.
Sure.
But I can't get A&E on another thing, so I'm stuck with what I am. But, yeah. You know, a lot of people are kind of changing and getting rid of services. So, you know, if there's something you like watching, maybe you can find it on a podcast.
Oh, you can watch on podcast too, or is it just listening?
No, podcasts are just listening, but... Like, for instance, I enjoy Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're familiar with Joe Rogan. He'd be a good podcast for you.
Yeah.
Listen to me like I know. Well, he's involved with MMA.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that you're a fan of that. Yeah.
Sure.
So, but he does a podcast, and then he reposts the podcast on YouTube.
Okay.
So I actually watch his podcast.
I got you.
And then there's others that I listen to, but enough of that. So you want to introduce yourself? So we know who you are?
Yeah, sure. My name's Ted. I'm a...
Do you have a last name, Ted?
Dabs.
That's maybe why I keep thinking. I'm trying to blend the two. Like I said, when you walked in, I feel like your name is Tad, and it's Ted Dabs. So
right.
That's where my brain's just... But go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Dabbs. A lot of people get that mixed up. Anyway, I'm originally from Michigan. Moved around a little bit to New Jersey and did personal training out there for many years and still currently personal training, but that's what I went out there for and to do. Finished graduate school at Western Michigan University with a master's degree in exercise science, and thought I wanted to be a personal trainer, so I went out there and pursued that. Ended up owning a health club briefly, and that kind of imploded on me after about 12 months. And,
why? What happened?
You know...
It sounds juicy.
Just didn't manage things well. You know, I'm not
too young.
Blaming anybody else. You know, I didn't really have the skills, the management skills, and to wear all the hats. I thought I could wear all the hats and realize quickly that you can't. Yeah. And sales, I didn't know much about sales, selling memberships, retaining members, things like that. More members went out the back door than came in the front. And so very quickly it ended. And there were some other things that kind of happened to me that I learned along the way that were a result of the previous business arrangement, the guy that ran the gym. Mm. And so that kind of hurt me. But you know what? I'm a big boy and I take responsibility for my actions. So, you know, lack of capital, lack of experience, basically trying to run a gym, a 6,000 square foot gym.
Don't you think when you say that, you know, you're not a victim for the most part, it sounds like. I mean, isn't that when you start to learn stuff? I mean, sure. if you're a victim of all that, you don't learn anything.
Yeah, that's true.
But when you sit there and say, you know, look, I didn't know enough. I didn't have enough experience. You learn stuff. You grow from that. You move on to, you know, maybe if you decided to open another gym, you would say, I was an idiot last time. Let's try to prevent that.
Right.
But some people are like, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that, and they don't learn anything. Correct. So you learned. You had a learning experience.
It was a learning experience.
Hopefully it wasn't too costly. The more costly, the more you learn, though. I do believe.
Spent a long time, you know, paying back money and getting out of debt and everything like that. So it was a tough experience financially, emotionally, you know, learning about myself and you know, but I did grow through that and was able to get back on my feet.
Nice.
And you know, like you said, I didn't blame other people, and I've always kind of been more of a entrepreneurial driven person. I started when I was in high school, worked as a painter for one of my teachers in high school.
Cool.
And that was my summer job. And then I left him and started my own painting business. So kind of always had that drive to do work for myself. And, you know, I've been painting and as you can see the way I'm dressed today, I'm still, in that.
You look like maybe
a little bit.
A painter. Do you have painter's pants on?
Yes, I do.
Nice.
Yeah.
Brings me back to like eighth grade.
And, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a style.
It was shit back then, back in eighth grade. You had the painter pants.
That was cool.
Yeah, but
I remember that, except I was a senior in high school when that phase came through.
How old are you?
53.
Okay, I'm 50. I'll be 51. So
all right.
We're not
a couple
far.
Of years, yeah.
Look good. Take care of yourself. Good job.
Try to stay in shape, sure. But anyway, so I, you know, moved from Michigan, went to grad school at Western Michigan University, moved to New Jersey and did the whole health club thing and failed at that and got myself back on my feet.
You didn't fail.
Well, learning experience, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, look, would you change it?
No.
Okay, so that's not fail.
Yeah.
You learned.
Well,
it just didn't. It wasn't the way you pictured it.
If I could change it and have made it successful, sure, I would rather have that.
No, but I'm saying, would you take that section out of your life?
No.
Okay.
Because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have met my wife.
That's right.
So
I always say that's the stuff that builds character.
Yeah, I have a saying about that. You build character and spiritual tenacity, going through, you know, trials and things, and you grow from it and learn from it and embrace it, you know, and don't blame other people and move on. So.
Humiliation, ego devastation.
Yeah.
That's what I like to say, you know, and that ego, because, you know, any little, you know, I start a podcast, next thing you know, I'm going to be the next Joe Rogan. And then I look and no one listens and I go, oh, ego devastation.
Yeah.
But, you know, in small little doses, but, you know, that's, I think, when the miracle happens for me. You know,
sure.
When I grow and learn and don't forget about that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but, here you are.
Yeah.
Is that, so you went from, and I don't want to take any of the story out. Yeah.
Get back from, so we lived in New Jersey, met my wife there. We moved to Georgia. So we lived there for about 3 or 4 years. We had kids, and then her family's all from New Jersey. And then her sister lived here in Delaware, owned the Rehoboth Car Wash. So we wanted to relocate where we knew some family.
What happened over there at the old Rehoboth car wash?
Well, Chris is my brother-in-law, so I do know the inside, some of the inside stuff. But
well, we don't want to,
You know, basically got a, you know, good offer. And, you know, as a good businessman that he is, you don't turn down a good number. And unfortunately for the customers who, you know, relied on that, the way he ran it and were happy with it and, you know, used his service, it's no longer, you know, and I've heard a lot of people unhappy about that.
Yeah, I don't, well, you know, and I like, I've lived here 20 something years. So I remember when they opened and I like your brother-in-law. He's great. I felt like at the end it was starting like anything, you know, it just gets, you know, the same old thing. And, you know, there was a lot of towel snapping and, you know, running around over there. And I felt like maybe it was in the works that it was going to be sold. It just didn't seem like that same Rehoboth car wash. It was the one the day, you know, they opened. And, but you know what? You know, things change. I don't particularly care for the setup over there now. I don't know. I guess it's wash your car and then you vacuum it out.
Right.
I guess that's how it works. I mean, there must be 20 vacuums over there now, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Probably one or two of them get used.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure it's a... What do I know? I'm not a car wash expert. It just seems a little... you know, I don't know. It was working, right?
Yeah, he did well there. I mean, he, you know...
Well, and that was, you know, what was smart is that we needed a car wash.
Sure.
I mean, really, it was brilliant. I mean, it was a huge investment, and it was a big risk, but we needed a car wash. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, he ran this town as far as the car wash business goes.
Right,
And I've been over to the other one a couple of times.
Yeah. I know he, you know, he... like I said, got a good number for the wash and knew it was his exit strategy at some point to be able to do that.
Is he still around?
So, yeah, he's actually still around. They live down in Bethany Beach.
He's not starting a new adventure?
And, no, he's actually working, I guess it's not top secret, but he works in
a big reveal.
Auto body.
Okay.
Business now, which is what his family did in New Jersey before they moved down here. Him and his brother both worked in that business.
Well, and they used to do a lot of detailing. So I knew that it was other, you know, I could tell that there was some other passions there, you know, detailing cars and, and you know, a little bit more fine tuning on stuff.
Yeah.
I'd never talked to, I talked to him, but not about his life. So that's cool. I'm glad everything's going great for them over there.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people are not happy with the way things are at the wash now, so, you know, but that's, it's not his problem now.
Or ours. We're on the west side over here.
Yeah.
We need a car wash.
Well, there you go.
Maybe we'll reach out.
Somebody listening will, you know.
Start a car wash.
put that together.
See, I'm the idiot that thinks, oh, well, you know what, I should start a car wash. I'm that guy. I'm like... Besides the idiot part, I'm like you. You know, I'm always like want to start a business. I'm always wanting to do something. I like the adventure.
Sure.
And I, you know, I'd be dumb enough to think I could open a car wash.
Well, you know, Carlos, I worked with Carlos on my business with coaching and things like that. And you know, he kind of, you know, let me know that there are people. We're all kind of the same. Where you work for a business and then you think you can do it better than the guy who's doing it. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I have that entrepreneurial drive anyway. So I always thought I had the ideas and, you know, the ability to make it work. And, there's a lot more to it.
Well, and your story a little bit reminded me a little bit of, you know, there was a time where I was in the turf management business. I had gotten a turf management degree from Rutgers, and I had started working on a golf course and just loved it. So, you know, I got to a certain point where I felt like, you know, if I want to make any more money, I'm going to need to go to school for it, went to school for it, and then that's the side of the business I absolutely hated, like the management side of it. And a buddy of mine, Eddie Brown, who has been on the podcast, he called me. I was an assistant over in Easton, Maryland. He's like, let's start a landscaping business. And I was like, yes, because I hated my job. I'm like, let's do it. But when we started it, it was the first time I really had to work, you know, decide, manage my freedom, you know, and I wasn't very good at it. And it was a lot of, you know, I made a lot of mistakes and I learned a lot of stuff from that. A lot of, you know, big changes that I needed to make. And that failed. And I'll take the blame because, you know, it was so new to me. Mm. And, but, you know, now in this business, I learned a lot about failing in that one. So like you, I wouldn't change a thing, but that period was pretty painful. It was definitely an ego devastation. But, you know, we come through. I think working for ourselves, I don't think I could work for anybody now.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm pretty much ruined for, trying to be, put in 8 hours in one place at one time.
It's bad.
Working, yeah. I actually tried that. I was a school teacher for a while. I taught physical education for middle school, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And I actually quit in the middle of my third year. By December, I said, went to the principal, look, I got to get out of this. I'm going crazy.
I always think as teachers, teachers get the summer off. I'm like, really? What's so hard about this? And I had a client who was a teacher, and she told me, you know what the hardest part about being a teacher is? That you have to be there every day. Like, there's no, like, I'm going to skip today. It's like you have to be there every day.
Yeah.
And which makes, that's how a lot of jobs are. But I guess there's some real pressure about every day for that, whatever, 9 months.
Well, you're dealing with whatever your class size is, 30, 40 different personalities. You're dealing with administrators. You're dealing with parents.
Absolutely.
And, those people don't accept any responsibility. They want to put it on you, the
parents,
the teacher.
Yeah, the others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, I can't deal with this. There's no discipline. The kids, the parents. And
I can't, I get a little critical of others. I'm like, I'd be like, if you raise your kid better, like I would have some feedback for everyone. Like I'm a professional, everything. So I would have I'd probably get fired or thrown out or get my ass kicked at the school or something. I just tell parents that you're doing a terrible job and I'm having to deal with it.
If people knew, I don't know if I say some of the stories online here, but there's a lot of stuff, and I think it's gotten worse since I was a teacher, certainly with bullying and just drugs, violence. There's a lot of that going on in schools that really flies under the radar, and they don't want the general public to know. It's gotten worse.
It's funny that you even, so we'll segue a little bit into that because you own Seaside Dojo.
Correct.
That's why I had you on because you're, that's Carlos, suggested because you have Seaside Dojo. And my kids, I have a 7, an 8, and a 13. And I want them to all learn karate and kick everyone's ass. Isn't that funny? That's, as a parent, that's what I want my kids to be able to beat up all the kids because I don't want them to be picked on.
Sure.
But then that becomes a problem as well.
Yeah, there's a certain level of aggression that you need to have.
And my kids aren't like that, and they don't, but they wouldn't do that, but
I like to use the word assertive.
Assertive.
You have to learn how to be assertive and stand up for yourself, and there comes a point where there's a line in the sand, and you have to cross that line, and sometimes it becomes physical. And if you don't, then that sort of those feelings of anxiety and pressure and discouragement, and kids commit suicide over these types of things.
I was bullied in school.
Yeah,
I was bullied
so was I.
By I was in by I was a kid that was 2 grades older than me, and he just tormented the shit out of me. And he would, I had to ride a bus. I grew up in Albuquerque, much bigger schools, much bigger kind of group of people. And this kid would throw these giant freaking spitwads at me. And it was just, it was a spitwad, but it was horrendous. And I still, I ended up ditching school, struggling with school, finally ended up getting a GED. I'd like to think that, I think it was a few reasons, but that didn't help. You know, I didn't want to go on the bus. I did not want to go to school. Right. I remember that when he moved up to like middle or high school and he was off the bus, I was like, oh my God, thank God. You know, and I think I had a year of relief. Freedom and then back on the next year and he started right up again. Mm. And sometimes I want to look him up on Facebook. I have looked for him.
Yeah.
And just tell him, you know what an asshole you were?
Yeah.
But I didn't.
Well, I've thought about that too, the kids that, you know, bullied me and that were, you know, jerks in school, and think about where they are now, and they're probably not in a good place, you know? Maybe that's just me. I like to think of it that way.
Isn't that funny how we like to think they're, like, dead,
you know,
in prison?
Well, yeah, I mean, just, you know, losers, nowhereville, you know?
What do you think's behind bullying?
Yeah.
Is that the magic question? Is that
That's a tough question because there's no one reason, I don't think, and the bulliers become the bullies oftentimes because they just pass down what's happened to them.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be, you know, parents, you know, father or whatever in the home beating the kids, and they go out and do it to others. It could just be, you know, gang mentality sort of thing where you're, you know, forced into it. You know, some gangs have initiation rites where they have to, you know, beat kids up and to get into the gang. And I don't think
jumped in.
And then just you know, kids that are, I don't know, they have no direction in life. You know, and they think that's the way to, you know, get what they want.
Well, and I don't, you know, I don't want to blame myself because I just was sitting there and just got hit with a spit wad. But, you know, maybe if you take two kids and do the same thing to both, maybe one kid's affected more. Like maybe I was sensitive. I mean, I'm not excusing it, but, you know, I was a little bit sensitive as a kid, you know, spit wad hit me. It was like, you know, I probably made it a little more overdramatic, in my head.
Yeah.
You know, not a cool situation, but like maybe it's just that I didn't react, or maybe if I had reacted, I don't know. Maybe the lack of reaction, you know, had him to, you know, be more of a bully. I don't know. It sucked. I hated it. And, you know, I always ask my kids, you know, is everything good in school? I said, you know, if somebody's bothering you, you know, just bring Arm and Hammer. But, you know, you can't do that.
Psychologically, there is there's something called a predator-prey instinct, where if you don't stand up for yourself and there's a bullying happening where the guy throws the spit wad or he hits you or shoves you up against the locker, that engages that submissive sort of behavior, engages the bullying more.
Right.
And so, you know, you almost have to stand up for yourself somehow, whether it's, and I teach kids verbal de-escalation skills first, because we don't want kids to just, you know, haul off and kick them in the groin or punch them in the throat or whatever. That's something that's going to, you know, seriously injure the other person.
When you're also, I think these would sound like things that you would also take into being as an adult.
Correct. It follows you.
Right.
And not only that, but bullies grow up and they're still bullies. So they don't get over it just because they left, you know, middle school, moved to high school, went on to college or wherever. They become adult bullies. And so, you know, and we become adults too. So if we don't learn how to deal with that bully situation as, you know, in our younger years, it's just going to follow us. And so it's, you know, there's no easy response to that, but, you know, most of us live in a civilized society where we don't have to fight every day, you know, and kids that grow up in the cities or the ghettos, they grow up that way. Every day is a fight for their survival.
Right.
And so if you don't grow up in that environment, you don't know how to deal with that. So part of it's an education thing, you know, and I have a lot of kids. Most of my kids have never really been in fights like that. So, you know, we just teach them, use your voice, you know, we call it a power voice. Basically, it's just a loud, hey, back off, leave me alone, don't come any closer, stop bothering me. And we just kind of repeat these phrases over and over again. And a lot of times that can help. And it actually empowers the person who's doing that too. So they're they're sort of defending themselves. They're not using their physical skills yet, but they're able to defend themselves in a positive way and get some confidence from that.
Well, and I would think that there's also, I'm not an expert in this, but there's like, you know, if you're dealing with a bully and you say, you know, in a loud way, you know, bringing obviously attention from him, but, you know, bringing attention to others around you with a loud voice mm-hmm. that something's going on, if it's just that kind of picking on bullying, that usually would stop. If it's other, like more aggressive, like I just want to kick your ass or something, you know, like that doesn't, you know, that starts to change from bullying to just an aggressive kid.
Right.
And I don't know if that's, I know in my mind it seems different. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology, but, you know, some kids just, they just want to, you know, they get in a state and they just want to hurt somebody.
Sure.
And I think that's different than bullying. Like, that's when you actually might have to start, like, defending yourself.
Right, right. There's,
I compare it to, like, a dog, you know.
Fortunately, the percentage of those, I think, are, it's much less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for kids that they're going to go right to that aggressive behavior. Again, I said before, it's complicated. My wife's a teacher in the school and deals with, you know, preschool kids who have all these different behaviors and, you know, aggressive behaviors and things like that. And so, you know, it starts at a young age and learning how, teaching those kids how to, coping skills when they get mad or frustrated. They don't just pick up a chair and throw it across the room. They don't just run over and hit somebody because they're frustrated and angry. I mean, it starts at a young age, you know.
It's interesting when you talk to a child and that struggles with that, the inability to control themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, whoa, this kid's really like
self-control.
Yeah, this is an expert's needed here because, you know, you want to get down and say, listen, buddy. You know, just be cool. And they're like, go to hell. And you're like, oh, okay, expert, I'm going to step out. You know, there are kids that really suffer from like some real challenges. Yeah. And I guess it comes from how they grow up, right? Probably many facets, but that's one of them.
I have, and I haven't seen this when I lived in Georgia or certainly when I taught there and in New Jersey. But I get kids that are coming in that are raised by their grandparents. I've had kids raised by their great grandparents, 80s, bringing, you know, 6-year-old kid to karate, and that's shocking to me because I've never seen that outside of Delaware, and I'm sure it's happening in other places too.
I've never seen it outside of Delaware.
But how is a kid supposed to grow up in that kind of environment? And God bless the ones that are taking care of them, because at least they're feeding them, clothing them, getting them to school. But the other social part, they're really missing out on. And so, you know, how did the kids deal with those issues and those feelings? And a lot of times it comes out in inappropriate ways, you know, where they're violent, basically.
Yeah.
So, I'm no expert on it. But in terms of martial arts, the way I look at martial arts, I don't teach kids to fight.
Okay.
Right? I do.
Makes sense.
I do, but I teach them to defend themselves.
Right.
Okay? And so there's a difference in how we approach that. So, you know, I'm not going to start a fight, and my martial arts students know that. They're you know, if they start a fight in school, they got problems at school, they got problems at home, and now they get problems when they come and see me. So, you know, there's a way of looking at what I teach and helping the kids understand there's a time when you might need to use this, okay? And we're going to use our verbal de-escalation skills first. We're going to stand up and maintain a strong posture. And then if it goes to the physical part where that person, and there are different ways that police officers know this. We call it menacing. The legal term is menacing. If somebody's physically threatening, coming into your space, raising their shoulders, there's certain tells. It's like poker, right? You know, if somebody's going to cock back an arm and swing, you know, throw a hook punch at you, right. If they glance off and they try to misdirect or redirect, shoulder elevation, eyes, just an aggressive movement forward into your space, that's all menacing. And kids need to learn those signs and see that. Even adults, most adults don't know. They get you know, a bad guy will get within an arm's length of them before they even realize what's happening.
Well, and I almost think it's almost the defense is almost more important than the offense.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I in my mind, I would run over and try to go just get in a fight. And then, you know, the person would step aside and I'd fall on my face and then they'd proceed to kick my ass.
Right.
You know, because I think all offense, but you could probably win a fight without even having any offense.
Yeah, it depends on how you define that because, you know, we teach blocking skills.
Right.
And our blocks are, we teach our kids our blocks are actually strikes. So there are certain blocks that we do that is, you know, if somebody's coming in with that big haymaker, for example, yeah, you can step out of the way, you can move off the line, you can change your angles, and that's all good. Or you can step in to that sort of danger zone and put up a strong block.
Okay.
And so what's happened is it's like that car that hits the tree, right? Car's going 80 miles an hour, but hits a big giant oak tree. The oak tree's not moving.
Nope.
But the car is going to, you know, basically wrap around it. And so we teach them from the stance through their legs up through their core into their body. When they throw that block, everything's locked. So that kid that's throwing that haymaker, bam, they hit your arm. It's like hitting that oak tree. And so now, is that defense or is that offense?
I'd say defense.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, offense is the guy throwing the big haymaker.
Yeah, he's that's initiating.
You know, but I used to love, you know, you see like clips of people getting a fight and you see the two guys and, you know, the one guy's like, oh, and then the guy that's kind of in defense, but he puts his arms up like an old boxer, you know, and he's like,
yeah.
And the guy, you know, he's like, what the fuck do I do with this guy? And then guy punches him. He's like, oh shit, this guy's like a boxer.
Yeah.
You know, it's the guy that just quietly puts his hands up and says, what do you want to do?
Right.
Defense, but...
So that all ties into our, we call defensive posture or assertive posture. You're getting your hands up in front, but we're not making a fist because, you know, the fist is telling the other guy, okay, it's go time, it's time to fight. So we want to try to keep the hands open, and we learn from martial arts that the cool thing about martial arts, there's a lot of empty hand techniques that we can use that are just as formidable as a closed hand. And we also teach kids, if you do hit somebody in the head, you know, with your fist, you're probably going to break your own hand.
Right.
So we definitely don't want to throw that. So tactically, you know, so we get into strategies and tactics as to, okay, well, what could we do when this, once we've entered the fight? And, you know, I mean, I could go on for hours talking about entries. There are ways that we enter this sort of dynamic defensive attack, you know.
Well, and how do you also handle like ego and humility? Because, you know, that's and I don't know if you can even teach that as to young kids, but, you know, the ability to step back and say, look, if you want to fight, you know, I'm here, but if you want to think about it, I don't need to fight. I can sit here and just,
sure,
you know, I can be humble. I can say, look, I don't want to hurt you, or I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get hurt, or ego where you just jump in, or you know, just fly right in. I mean, that's what I always take from martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, like a Bruce Lee or something, you know, where he would just, you know, he could shuck and jive his way until the guy was completely exhausted. Sure. And never even touch him.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't important that he strike him. It was, you know,
right,
the balance and can. Is that, am I right on that, or am I off base with that?
Yeah, confidence allows you to stand there and not do anything, really, if, you know, unless the attack's coming, mm-hmm. You know. So then you got to move, you got to do something. But your whole confidence and demeanor is, I believe, it's perceived. It's how you carry yourself. So bullies can sort of zone in on, goes back to that predator-prey thing, the ones that are weak, the ones that are frail, the ones that aren't going to stand up for themselves.
Right.
Very rarely do they come up and challenge the big, strong dude, right, with the big arms, he's taller. Now, sometimes that does happen. I'm recalling a video. There was this kid, I think it was in Australia.
I think I know it.
Little kid was just, you know, hammering this big kid, and he picked him up and almost broke the kid's neck, pile-drived him.
I saw that.
Yeah, this came out several years ago. So
was he in karate, or was he just...
No, neither. I don't think either of them were in karate, but apparently when you dig deeper in the story, this bigger kid was bullying the younger kid.
Mm-hmm.
So he, you know, was trying to feel his oats one day and just kind of said, all right, I'm going to make a stand here. You know, that could have turned out really bad, you know, for both of them. Kid could have had a broken neck, paralyzed for life, you know. I go back to the ancient samurais, the samurai warriors. When they drew their swords, they pretty much had to draw blood, right? When they took that sword. So they didn't want to have to take it out, but they knew when they did, you know.
It was serious.
It was very serious. And not only that, but I mean, if you look back then, they didn't have, you know, emergency responders, first responders. If you got cut back then, you were going to get probably infected. You're going to die from some sort of infection, or you're going to bleed out. You might have taken that guy's head off, but now you're still going to die because you got cut in the process.
Right.
So the whole idea of, you know, we don't want to have to fight as a last resort. It's only a defensive thing. And that's, again, what I try to instill in our kids. And they develop confidence when they come up through the ranks. They get their belts. They feel more confident. They learn these cool techniques. They build more confidence. They break wood. They break boards. They go out and they compete at tournaments and try to win trophies against other students. And so, you know, that through that process of developing confidence, they realize, hey, yeah, I can stand here and this guy can call me names and, you know, whatever, and it doesn't matter because I know who I am and right. I can just walk away from it.
Yeah, exactly. I think the bullying is tough. I remember as a parent, and I think it's really tough for a parent that's dealing with a bully or dealing with a child that's being bullied, because my father, you know, he's like, he met us at the bus stop. Come on, guys, you know, why don't you guys come over for burgers? I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, what are you doing? You know, and, you know, the bully, his name is Jamie, is what his name is. Jamie just thought that was hysterical. Oh, you needed to get your dad. And
yeah.
So it's like, even as a parent that's dealing with it, you don't even know what to do. I just read an article about the mother that busted into the high school and confronted all these kids that were bullying, and she got arrested, and she's like, I'm sorry, but I didn't know what to do. And, you know, sure. She flew off the handle at these kids, and she said, I owe them all an apology. But, you know, as a parent, it's tough, too, because helping almost hurts, makes it worse. But
yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. And, you know, the schools, I believe, are not capable of really dealing with it.
No.
They're just not. And there's laws in place. You know, Delaware has laws, and... you have the safety resource officers there, but the problem with, you know, technology, right, going back to that with, you know, Facebook and Twitter and my kids, the Snapchat and all these other mechanisms they have to communicate, you know, it's out there, you know, and so that whole cyberbullying issue is tough to deal with, tough to manage. So, you know, with the schools, they're... I mean, I don't think they can deal with it. I mean, they might be able to prevent the physical part.
Yeah.
You know, keep them safe that way. But, and not even then, really.
Yeah, well, that's funny when you talk about that. Because I tend to, like, I don't use Twitter. Do you Facebook a little?
I have a business sort of Facebook account. Mm-hmm. And Carlos gets on me all the time because I never do anything. I don't even know how to get into it.
Well, that's a problem. But if, you know, I'll use Facebook, I'll use Instagram. I'm pretty mellow, but like I don't use Twitter because I feel like Twitter is it's like a big sandbox of people that just want to, like, you know, pick on people or, you know, if you do something, it's just hostile. So I don't use it. But my kids are on there. Mm. I'm like, I don't think you should be on Twitter. I think it's just, you know, and then when I start saying, I think that's where the trouble is because, you know, me and you, this is new, really, social media. We've only been experiencing it 10, 15 years. I don't even know how long it's been. It's new to us as adults. But our kids have been dealing with it all their life. You know, yeah. They've been hearing about it. You know, as soon as they get old enough, they're on Instagram. And so you know, I think they're a little, the evolution is, you know, maybe a little more for them as far as the social media goes. I still take my old feelings and put them on my kids' situations. Mm. And sometimes, you know, whether it's good or bad, my kids handle social media a lot better than I do.
Yeah.
Now, they also don't find themselves, they're not being bullied, and, you know, I don't think they're bullying anybody. So, you know, and they're not hopefully putting anything inappropriate. They're pretty even keel. My one son, I really should talk about my son, David. He's the only one that's really on it. My other kids are a little too young for it. But you know, we're connected, you know, and I follow him. But he just likes posting pictures of bands and at con. We just got, we were just at Firefly. And he loves photographers. He loves actual people that do photography. So he had all these pictures of the photographers up at the concert.
Right.
And then getting pictures with photographers. I mean, he's just, he likes photography. So I guess, you know, if he's staying out of trouble, it's not so bad. But that's where I start worrying about it, my fears on his life, which do you ever struggle with that? I mean, do you have kids, I guess?
Yeah, I have boy-girl twins. They're 12.
Okay.
And
David's 13.
They're definitely connected. They both have phones, iPhones, and they communicate with their friends using their phones all the time. Now I have some restrictions put on that since I can manage that, you know.
What sort of restrictions do you put on?
One thing that I know how to do.
Restrict.
Well, I have, they get it for right now like 2 hours a day. Where they can just unlimited to the apps that I allow them to use. But it's funny because my son will always text me for more time. You know, Dad, can I get, you know, 15 minutes more, an hour here? And I never, a lot of times I don't respond back because usually I'm working and I can't, you know, respond back. But so the content that they are exposed to, I can manage and for the most part, keep them, you know.
It's like an addict.
Yeah.
Can I get one more beer?
The amount of time that they're on it.
Yeah.
But even at home, it's difficult too, because then they have the computer, and then that's a whole other thing, and so we're trying to manage that.
What do you think the fear, what do you think the, because I'm like you, I'm dealing with the same thing, I'm, you know, but what do you think, what's the worst that's going to happen, do you think? What are we preventing?
Well, I talk to other people about it too, and some of the what we're doing right now, this sort of belly to belly talk and relationship and conversation, I think it's being lost. You know, they don't know how to communicate face to face, or would rather do it, you know, electronically, and you know, maybe that's the way business is going to be done in the future. What do I know? But from the business people I talk to, they're like, yeah, we need kids to learn how to look you in the eye, have a conversation, speak up, have some confidence, and interact.
But don't you feel your kids do that now?
I guess that's the fear, if it's excessive. Mm-hmm. And because, we have a lot of restrictions on the amount of time and how, you know, that they can spend on that. So I don't want it to get to that point. And that's kind of, I think, the concern of some people that I've talked to, my concern. You know, you look the person in the eye, have a conversation, shake the person's hand, have this, develop a dialogue, you know. I'm big on kids looking them in the eye, shaking hands, having a conversation, my kids, you know, with adults.
Do you allow your kids to work or help you at the dojo?
Yes. So they're both black belts now.
Okay.
My daughter just got hers in May. My son got his about a year before that because he's a little more disciplined, was a little more into it, had more confidence. So part of their responsibilities now are to, you know, basically help me manage some of the classes, teach some of the classes. They've also, when I pick them up after school, off the bus, they would come to the dojo with me because my wife's a teacher and You know, there's nowhere for them to go, really.
Right. So my kids all just left. This is salon camp.
Yeah.
Summer salon camp.
So they spend time at the dojo, and they have some responsibilities that I expect them to do, and it's not where I actually pay them. This is how I buy you clothing. This is what you get, you know, your food. So you need to take a responsibility and help out here. Mm-hmm. So they'll sweep the floor, set things up for me, stock the cooler with drinks, vacuum. Nothing that's, you know, I think major.
You know? I think that's all major. You know? Because I feel, so, I mean, my kids come here and it's the same thing. And I think it is a huge deal because honestly, you know, they learn about, you know, the business that you have. And, you know, when you say you want your kid to be able to shake someone's hand, you know, David has to, he was shampooing clients this morning.
Wow.
And, you know, I tell him, you know, introduce yourself. Mm. Say thank you, talk, converse. But as soon as I step out of it, get out of it, like there was a lady that was in here today and I couldn't sit there. I had to do other things and listen. But they just had a great conversation. Mm. He did a nice job. She sounds so nice. Yeah. Did a great job.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, right. Like I forget that all the work we do on a daily basis, it comes out eventually.
Right.
You know, we're making great kids. They're not, he's better off at 12 or 13 than I was at 13.
Yeah.
And he's being raised by a maniac sometimes, you know? But I think, you know, having your kids hang out in your small business, I think that is really, for me, it's for my family, it's key, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've, for instance, every little kids, they'd come out, can I get you a glass of water or a cup of coffee?
That's awesome.
And then they come out with half a cup of creamer with a little bit of coffee, but you know, they learned.
Sure.
And,
well, yeah, what I meant, it wasn't anything major. Yeah, you're right. That is major.
It's huge.
It's not like they're, you know, managing my books and, you know, doing something that's, I don't know, above their ability.
Pay grade.
You know.
Pay for grade. No pay.
Yeah, for no pay.
I, you know, it's weird. To me, it seems like a lot of these kids that are really struggling with, you know, that kind of issue, it's really parenting. It isn't a phone. It isn't an iPad. You know, there was a time when the iPad came out, and so we're kind of in that same window. You know, if 5 years ago, if your kid had an iPad, he wasn't going to evolve into anything because he was using electronic devices. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years later, if your kid's can't use an iPad, he's not going to make it in life because he can't use an iPad.
Sure.
So it seems like it's always changing. Life's changing really quickly. It seems like maybe it's slowing down a little bit for like when the iPad came out, life was just...
Right.
Crazy. And so it's always, you know, someone always has a different opinion about it. But it's the kids to me that are, you know, with these, that get everything they want. Those are the ones that seem to really.
The entitlement.
Entitlement.
Everything they, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely, we're not about that at all.
No.
Well, you're not entitled to anything.
I don't even have a joke for that.
Maybe we, you know. Try to shelter our kids a little bit in some ways with, you know, holding them back from these things. But in the end, I'm confident that, you know, kind of like, what was the old saying? If you, you know, moderation, you know.
Everything in moderation.
Yeah. So.
Except for sugar.
I don't think they're going to get hurt with that.
Well, see, and I'm a little bit different. I let my kids do really whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that like whatever they want, but I'm also not going to restrict them. Mm. You know, if you're going to stay up till 3 a.m. watching YouTube, you're going to be tired and you're going to figure it out. And I don't help my kids. My son David, you know, he just finished 8th grade on his own.
Yeah.
I never sat down and did any homework with him because I was raised by parents that did everything for me. Mm-hmm. And I had a tough, tough, tough life. I mean, growing up. I mean, sure. It was just, I was a spoiled, entitled little asshole. And it took, you know, life to beat me down a couple notches for me to start, you know, finding some humility and stuff. And, but we would sit at the table and do for 4 hours, 3 or 4 hours doing homework because I paid no attention. I didn't understand anything. They had to do all, there was like, I had school at home and then school at school. Mm. And I said, I'm not doing that. If you don't understand what you're doing, you need to go ask your teacher because you didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
And now my son can He takes, you know, he's fully responsible. In sixth grade, we had a couple of crying tears, some tears, mm-hmm. little baby tears. But I also found out that I don't really know how to do a lot of that stuff they're doing in school. So I'm not.
That's why you didn't help him.
I'm not. No, that's not. I would help him. But, you know, I'm also, you know, if I'm not going to sit there and do all of their work.
Sure.
You know, it's about the about being adults. What kind of adults are we making?
Mm-hmm.
And I always say I'd rather you had B's and C's, you know, and a couple A's and know how to talk to your teacher and say, look, I didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
I need help. Then get all A's pluses because you and I sat there and did all your work after school together.
Yeah. That's where we're at now with our kids, you know. But, you know, they also need to have those study skills. They have to learn that discipline. And sometimes, you know, you just have to learn it by going through it and experiencing it and failing.
Absolutely.
Life's lessons.
It's tough being a parent, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Because it's an easy, you know, it's easy to, it's an easy route to just be, you know, tough and stern and, you know, this is what we need. And then, but then we're like, is this, you know, but what are we making? You know, what's the future? It's tough. It's not an easy road. Like, and then I have another boy, Sam. I'll probably have to be helping Sam some.
He's different.
He's a little different. He's a little more, you know, he's daydreams a bit.
Sure.
So I'm not opposed, and it's not that I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'm just trying to think of, you know, what was done with me and what was the result? You know, luckily I still was able to pull together somewhat in the end here, but it was a tough little spell in the middle.
Sure. Yeah. Well, there's, I don't know. We're doing life and doing it the best we can, and they're going to turn out, you know.
That's cool. They're both black belts. I guess it makes sense, but that's...
My thing for my daughter, and I've told her this. She's like, well, why do I have to continue with karate because I got my black belt now? And I said, because you have to convince me that you have the confidence to stand up for yourself. Whether it's talking to your teacher, getting extra help, or if somebody's, you know, saying something about you behind your back and you want to confront them, I need to know that you have the confidence to use these skills that you're learning. And, you know, she kind of gets that, but it's still sinking into her now, you know.
Right.
And I told her the story of my instructor who, you know, had four daughters and... The oldest one got a career in the music business. She was a music producer, was down in Nashville, and she was a black belt. Was down there doing something, taking photographs of a building or something. She was attacked, and they hurt her. But not only physically, emotionally, psychologically, it changed her. It changed her. Like, she was not the same person after that.
Yeah.
And that's my greatest fear for her is that, you know what, at the end of the day, I want you to have that confidence to stand up for yourself. You may not win that battle, but you'll know you did your best. And you'll know that your value in life is worth more, that you can continue, you know, doing what you're passionate about, doing what you love to do, and that that event will never... erase that or take that away from you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's tough with girls, right?
Because
you worry more about your daughter than maybe your son.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, she's growing so fast, man. I mean, it's just like, you know, we were in Washington, D.C. over the whole weekend, spent 3 days there. Great, great trip. You know, and just learning, you know, watching her, and she's not aware yet where she needs to be, what's lurking out there. And so that's, you know, that's why I want her to continue.
What's lurking?
Bad people.
I mean.
A car that might run her over if she didn't see it when she was not riding the bike and not paying attention.
Okay.
The sidewalk changed and there was a lip on there and she didn't see that and she crashed.
You guys took your bikes up to D.C.?
Well, they had these bike share things.
Okay.
Oh, it's an awesome thing. Whoever invented that was like, you know.
Yeah.
Great. So you get this app on your phone.
Right.
You go to this little, I call it a kiosk, but basically it's like a bike rack with all these bikes in there.
Yep.
They give you a combination code. You punch it in, you take the bike out, and you get it for 29 minutes, I think it is. And then you ride it wherever you want, and you put it back before the time.
You put it back at another rack.
Another rack.
Yeah,
but they're all over the place.
Right. We were just up in Brooklyn. All over the place. We were in Brooklyn, and we saw it. They had those everywhere.
They have those in the city, too.
Yeah. Are they blue? Were they blue bikes?
These I know there's were red.
A, maybe, the, yeah, yeah. I know there's a couple of companies that do it. And they're pretty nice bikes, right? They have, like, baskets. And
yeah, yeah.
Cool
then
stuff
a
on
little,
them.
You know, speed, you know, they can change the gearing on it so you're not just, you know, like, spinning out or whatever. So, anyways, so as far as her awareness and that whole thing, you know, I want her to be aware.
But, we, you know, yeah, we can't tell them everything. I mean, we got to hit the curb sometimes and fall off.
Sure.
I mean, I guess you'd rather maybe not that
yeah
falling off, but.
Well, she didn't get injured, so that was good. But, you know, we talked to her afterwards. Hey, why did that happen? Well, I didn't see it. Well, okay, where are you looking? What, you know.
I had a funny, we went to, we're big into music, we love music, and so we went to Fire, have you been to Firefly?
Never, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, you should go, it's amazing, we had the best time, but I took my wife, and we took David, this is our third year taking David, and his buddy Oliver. Oliver had not been yet, and these guys love music, and yeah. We got up there, and they're basically like, do you care if we just go walk around without you? And I was like, oh, you know. I go, you know what? Go for it. I go, get a phone. I said, let's meet back here, you know, in, you know, like 9 minutes. And then we'll, no. I said, you know, we'll meet back here at 5. And I let them go.
Yeah.
And they did great. And we finally got to, we bought VIP tickets, not because we're important, but it's a little bit more. Like if, you know, you had your general population crowd, mm-hmm. Firefly a lot creates a VIP section, which is just over to the left. Yeah. It's a little bit more money, but it's a little less populated. Mm-hmm. So the kids, it's, you know, the kids, they're not in that main thrust of people.
Right.
And they were off doing their thing, and my wife and I were kind of just hanging out doing our thing. And I don't drink. We don't drink any alcohol, so... It'd be one thing to be drunk and let your kids take off, but you know,
yeah,
we were sober, and but they, you know, they stayed in touch, and then they ended up coming back, and they got on the rail at 3:30 for TLC, and they stayed on that rail till 12:30. But while they were on the rail, one of them would take off and go get like water for themselves. They'd get water for both of them, or they'd come back and get something to eat, or my son David was, and I'm sitting there, we're all in the same area, but oh, there goes David. And he would take off, and he's also going to buy shirts at the merch tent. Uh-huh. And he went all the way to the shirts, went all the way to the tent, bought shirts, came all the way back, wrong size, went back, traded them for a bigger size. I mean, he had done all this on his own. And he finally comes up with 3 shirts, and he's like, you know, can you hold my shirts? I'm like, no, I'm not holding your shirts. You hold your shirt. Take care of your damn shirts.
Yeah.
But, you know, he handled all this stuff on his own where – you know, I might have been like, okay, oh, you're going to go across the festival into the merch tent. Maybe I better go with you.
Right.
I didn't really realize what he was doing, but he handled it. And, you know, I was proud of him. I was proud of my boy.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm not sure, you know, and I'm not telling any, you know, this is just my deal with my family. I'm not telling people what to do with their family. Everyone handles their own stuff differently. But it was a kind of a cool moment because, you know, he survived.
Sure. And, well, you know, some of the things I did as a kid, you know, I really wonder if I could do that with my kids now. I mean, in the summertime, we had babysitters and, you know, we'd be gone the entire day.
Yep.
The entire day. I mean, we'd be across town. We'd be out in the woods. We'd be doing stuff and nobody knew where we were. I don't know if it was a safer time then, you know, grew up in the 70s.
I think it was worse.
You think it was worse?
Mm-hmm. I think it all started when that little girl fell in the well in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was when CNN really started reporting 24-hour news, you know, and I lived in New Mexico. She was in Texas. I don't know where you were when it happened, but we all went out back and looked to see if we had a well in our backyard.
Yeah.
You know, it made it feel like that was our neighborhood. And since then, it's just reporting on shit that, you know, it's like a kid gets snatched in Seattle, But we're getting the news in Delaware, and it makes us feel like kids are getting snatched in Delaware. And it's yeah. created a lot of fear. You know, I think that, you know, and I, more people are being watched. More people are under registered, you know, that are have bad behavior. There's more people in a system now. You know, I watched that special about, not Ted Kaczynski, but the other guy that, you know, the other mass crazy murderer, Ted...
Bundy. Yeah.
I mean, he was killing people, and then when the cops got on him, he just went to the next county over and started killing more people, and the two counties weren't even speaking with one another.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're in a safer time, but I do know what you mean, because you just don't want it to be the time.
Yeah.
The one time where you should have said no. So I can, yeah. I definitely relate. But one yeah. day, they're going to grow up. They're going to go off.
That's right.
Hopefully they take care of us.
Yeah. Well, that's the job of a parent, you know, raise them up and I believe, you know, have good core values and be able to have that discipline, that self-control, that confidence that they need to be successful. There's probably different ways of going about it, and I think every kid is different, so not every kid probably can be, you know, can have that developed the same way, but... yeah, I mean, some of the stuff I did, I mean, we had guns and stuff,
oh, yeah.
and we took them out.
Dude, we used to spray, and I hope no kids are listening, but we used to spray, like, our whole arm with Lysol and set it on fire.
Oh.
Until the, you know, and it was a flaming arm, and then as soon as the Lysol was gone, it was
yeah,
gone. But
right.
if my, we spray tennis balls, roll them through the house on fire, we just, yeah. idiots.
Yeah.
My parents didn't even had a hinkling of idea what we were doing, it would have been terrible.
Sure. It's
fire scary. Scares me. Fire for my kids. Like, don't yeah. mess with fire.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
it's unpredictable.
It's unpredictable, but
you know, yeah, our you thing, we played.
Do you want to say it? I hope I didn't give anybody Lysol
little pocket
ideas.
Knives. Yeah. We each had our own little pocket knives and we play chicken and just drop them. As close as you could to the next guy's foot.
Yeah.
You know, of course we weren't wearing shoes either.
No. Nope.
And whoever moved first was the chicken, you know. You can imagine how that ended up several times. Yeah, I don't know. I think influences.
And did your parents know about that?
No.
So you know that our kids are doing stuff that we don't know about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Because if we knew about everything, they'd never learn about anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you got to go out there and get your foot stabbed sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't want to see it happen. You know, I'll say, right. Oh, dude, what happened to your foot? Well, I got stabbed. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't even want to know, but put a Band-Aid on it, you know.
Yeah. You can't shield them from everything. And I don't think, to your point, I agree that, you know, they need to experience those things and go through the, you know, the failures, you know, there's used to be saying there's no such thing as failure, only feedback, you know, and if you can look at it that way, you know, but then you hear the stories of the kids who, you know, got their driver's license, went out and, you know, driving too fast, wrong way and hit a school bus and killed herself, you know, that did happen. So, you know, you don't want those things to happen, but it's as a parent, you're right, it's hard, you know, knowing when to let go, knowing when to, okay, you got this. I'm probably more the kind that, you know, forces a little more, you know, into that box or whatever you should be doing. And that's just my style, I guess.
Well, I think we're a lot alike in that sense, but I'm also with my other son, it's more, I'm more kind of just nicely focusing on the results of him not doing what he was supposed to do. You know, I mean, he's taller than me now. I mean, you know, I asked him last week, can you take the trash out? You know, it was a week ago today. Because I'm divorced, so my son lives with me. He's with me for a week. He's with his mom for a week. And she came and picked him up last Monday. And I said, you know, take out the trash. It's Monday. Okay. Well, I get home and his trash didn't get taken out. So we didn't have...
Missed the trash.
Missed the trash. And I talked to him. I said, you know, go check that trash can. You know, he went out there and it's like, it smells like a dead animal's in there. He's like, Jesus. I go, well, that's what happens when you don't take it out. You know?
Sure.
That's why I have you take it out. It stinks. There's, you know, it's rotten. So I always remember as a kid, 1 minute, something changed for me. And I don't know if this happened to you, but 1 minute I just realized if I didn't do it, it wasn't getting done.
Yeah.
Like it was, and I think it was with trash, you know, it's just, I had a maturing moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that, I know it will happen with our kids. We don't, you know, nobody, you know, no adult eats, you know, blow pops anymore. I mean, eventually we freaking grow up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember the Icy Pops? You know, I'm sure you, I don't know if you buy them for your kids. You know, we buy them in the summer. You know, they're the green and yellow and orange. And as a kid, we loved them.
Sure.
I tried to eat one as an adult. Have you ever tried to eat one as an adult?
Yeah. It's
it like, burns. What's that burning in my throat? It's like, it's acid. It's anti-adult freeze pops.
Right, right.
But, you know, some things we just, you know, eventually we have to grow up.
Yeah, we were in D.C. and my daughter got this drink from, there's like 50 food vans there, you know, and we were getting ice cream in it. Oh, let me have a sip of that. It looks good. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What? How can you even drink that? Yeah, they have, you know, different, I don't know, I guess everything matures, right?
Everything matures. Hey, you want to? Where is your dojo?
So I'm located at the Nassau Commons area, where the vineyard is. If you know where that is, the Nassau Bridge. There's a little street right there that cuts through. Cape Gazette is in there.
The little sports CrossFit, complex.
The factory. Yep. They're my neighbors right next door. Atlantic Millworks right there.
And do you just do, I mean, my oldest son did, some karate when he was little. He didn't want to do it anymore, so I didn't make him. But, is it just like, you just, if you want to start, you just show up and you start.
Yeah.
Can you blend in any class? Like if I want to be in a class and I want to show up today, could I start today and still blend in?
Our program is broken down by age. Okay. So, for example, we have a 3 to 5 year old program. They're earlier in the day. If you're a white belt or you're just new, you'll be in that class based on your age. Then we go 6 to 10. If you're 6 to 10 year old, you're just starting out. You're a white belt. You'll be in that class. If you're 10 and over, you'll be in the 6 o'clock class. And so basically, the way martial arts programs work, and at least in my school, because I don't have, you know, 300-400 students. White belts come into the class. They work out with all the other belt ranks. So you might have a white belt that's in there with a brown belt or black belt, and they all work out together. The way it works is they're working on their own curriculum. They have their own set of requirements and skills that they need to learn.
Right.
So they're not, you know, white belt's not in there trying to do a jump spinning hook kick like a black belt would do.
Right.
They have to stay with their own curriculum and they have to earn their way up to earn, you know, working towards those things.
How old do you, is there any, what's the age where you can start?
We start as young as 3, but the 3-year-olds sometimes aren't ready. If they need a lot of help, correction, or, you know, if I have to really manage them, they're not ready. If they can manage themselves,
their parents aren't ready. Just a small joke.
Well, I do have to say no sometimes. I don't want to say no to a new student, right? I mean, that's revenue. But I do. And, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's not good for them. It's not good for the child, you know, to try to.
Well, and you also, you know, it's like when some parents bring in these little kids for these haircuts, I'm like, and then they're screaming and fighting. I go, look, I'm not going to be this kid's worst nightmare. I'm not cutting his hair.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would like him to come back later one day, but not, you know, this negative connection.
Scarred for
life. Right, scarred for life.
Well, yeah, it's more, I guess, for my benefit because, you know, I can't prompt every single kid in the class. You know, if I have 12 kids in a class, I can't. I do have helpers, you know, assistant instructors, but it becomes chaos. So, anyways, you can start at a white belt, work your way up, and at some point in the past, when I had a smaller, I was in a different location, I had a smaller school, I had to divide it up more by ranks, you know, so like the beginners were together and then the advanced kids were together. Kind of might be moving towards that again now that we have more upper ranks.
Do you have a website?
SeasideDojo.com.
Seaside Dojo. And you you have a Facebook page, but you're not sure how to get on it.
Correct.
Let's call Carlos.
I mean, if you go Seaside Dojo Facebook, you'll pull it up.
Okay.
It'll pop up there. We do post things. When I say we, I don't mean me. It's Carlos.
Well, you know what? That's where you get your kids involved. You know, take advantage of this, these skills. You know, my son, you know, we do a lot of stuff on film. He does all the editing. You know, the take advantage. You know, this could be, you know, your future. You know, your kids can, you know, put out your advertising, you know, take it to the next level. They're smart.
Yeah.
I mean,
I do incorporate a little bit with like the attendance and stuff inside the school. Like if my daughter's, I'm running behind and I can't put my attendance cards in the computer, she'll help out with, on the back end, some of those things. But
kids love doing that stuff, man.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are ways that I could probably do that.
They may end up taking over that business one day.
Perhaps. You never know.
Well, listen, Ted. You've been a good chat, my friend. We exceeded our time.
Uh-oh.
No, the only reason I talk all day, I got to do another podcast at 1:45, so
okay.
I'm going to have to stop. But thank you. That was a lot of fun, and we barely talked about karate.
Yeah.
A little bit.
We talked about a little bit.
A little bit. But, you know, that's what I like. You know, that's Rehoboth Social. Just a couple guys chatting.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for having me. And absolutely. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And maybe I'd love to have you back. You know, maybe we can find something else to talk about. But I really appreciate it.
Sure.
So, and now you're not a podcast virgin. Now you've been on a podcast. So you tell say, kids, look what I did, a podcast.
Yeah, I'm
Daddy's
cool
not
now.
So old.
Yeah.
Ted, thank you. I really appreciate it, brother.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Bye.
Bye.